uncertainty over the state abortion ban taking effect, another Trump indictment, plus Mike Pence stumps at the state fair, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 4th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Planned Parenthood and other abortion clinics said they stopped providing abortions in Indiana, even as a last-ditch effort to halt the ban put the new law on hold. The ACLU, on behalf of abortion providers, filed a last-minute petition with the state Supreme Court, asking it to stop the abortion ban from taking effect while further litigation continues. The ban can't take effect at least until the court answers that petition, which could take days or even weeks. But Indiana Planned Parenthood CEO Rebecca Gibron says her clinics aren't waiting to find out what happens, no longer providing abortions.
It's not patient-centered care to try to have patients navigate through this chaos and turbulence at the whims of extreme lawmakers.
Gibron says Planned Parenthood will remain open to Hoosiers for other health care needs and to help patients find legal abortion resources. How should Hoosiers feel amid the uncertainty of the ban taking effect? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Oshia Boyd, public engagement editor for the Indianapolis Star. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, should the clinics be trying to provide care for as long as possible?
Look, these are businesses, and they have employees, and these employees have to decide whether they're even going to remain in Indiana. I mean, it isn't a question of whether there's going to be a ban. There's going to be a ban. And they need to make plans for themselves to go to states where they're interested in protecting the health of women. Indiana is not among them anymore. And if you were a lawyer, you would advise them to take steps to close down because you've got a rogue attorney general out there. And, you know, unless the lawyer's a unindicted co-conspirator crackpot lawyer, they would tell him to stop now and get your.
I was just going to say, you're getting a little ahead of the next step.
Yeah, but that's the kind of advice a competent lawyer would give them. Would say, look, you know, you have your lives, you have your homes, you have to have employment, you need to make plans. And you need to go ahead and go to a state that's interested in protecting the lives of women. And Indiana is not that state any longer.
Is it fair to be a little annoyed at kind of every side, just amid the legal, the question about the legal uncertainty here, which is the ACLU waited until literally almost the last minute to file this petition for rehearing. The AG's office, to be fair, filed their reply pretty quickly to get the ball rolling for the Supreme Court. But now the Supreme Court, as we tape this, Supreme Court hasn't answered the petition for rehearing. Once they do, if they deny it, then the law can go into effect within the next few days after that. But technically, they could grant it. They could grant this preliminary injunction that the ACLU is asking for that would stall even further the law from taking effect. Is it fair to be a little annoyed at how chaotic this is?
Sure, I guess. But, do you want the court to be fast or do you want it to be right? You know, as part of the, you know.
Oh, we'd like it to be right, but that's not an option.
Part of the consideration here too. They exercised all the options they could, and what the timing of which. I mean, of course, there's politics around this. Of course, there's greater attention at certain times around this, and the ACL clearly coordinated that effort. But they're also running out of options, right? There is going to be an abortion ban in Indiana, whether it's less limited than this one, but there's going to be some kind of abortion ban. Whether it's completely thrown out, the legislature comes back. These aren't close votes in the Indiana General Assembly
on putting
an abortion ban in place. So I think they're doing what they can, but Ann's right. There's going to be an abortion ban in Indiana.
For 40 years, nearly 50 years, we saw a national constitutional guarantee of abortion rights from the Supreme Court. And over that 40-plus years, we saw lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit from multiple states trying to chip away at exactly how far those guarantees went, obviously culminating with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Are we now facing a scenario in Indiana where, because the Indiana Supreme Court acknowledged that at least some abortion rights are guaranteed by the state constitution, even if perhaps relatively limited, are we looking at lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit in the Absolutely. Months and years to come, trying to figure out exactly what that means?
That may be the one given in this whole cloudy scenario. You know, the notion of chaos and confusion clouding this issue has basically been the state of affairs ever since the Dodds decision came down. We had confusion over what the federal government could and couldn't do in terms of ensuring that there would be mail order delivery of medications, abortion medications. And then there were states saying, wait, you can't do that, even though it's a federal agency and the interstate commerce, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have confusion on the part of healthcare providers about what constitutes the health of the mother. Is that mental? Is it physical? How dire does the situation have to be before we can actually render care? The confusion is the name of the game here. And chaos, for better or for worse, is the name of the game. And I don't see that changing anytime soon because either in the state or at the federal level, because we'll see more states put this issue to voters, whether they want to or not. Voters in many ballot initiative states have taken it upon themselves to say, we want this on the ballot. And that will change the dynamic. And who's to say that there's so many pieces and parts here moving. I'd be shocked if we ever had a conversation around this table that said, wow, that's settled. Once and for all, we're done with this one.
Yeah. But if there is one bit of clarity beyond, there seems like more lawsuits to come. There's already the Religious Freedom Restoration Act lawsuit that's ongoing, but won't be resolved for months or even a year. But if there is one clear thing, it's that Hoosier women and pregnant people are left in the middle with not a lot of options. Is that right?
Yes, and confused on what's going on. I would assume a lot of just regular women, everyday women, have no clue what to do now, what to do, where to go, where can I get help. I'm assuming doctors are confused. And you took the words out of my mouth. Chaos is the name of the game. I think we've just created a situation where everybody's just kind of like, what do I do? Where do I go? Planned Parenthood does much more than abortion care. So, is Planned Parenthood open? That's what they're going to start saying. Is Planned Parenthood open at all? You know, so this is, and I think everyone's right, we're going to see lawsuit after lawsuit forever. I don't think we're ever, ever, ever going to be done with abortion.
If you wanted to do a compromise, though, between the people who think that abortion should be completely illegal and the people who think it should be absolutely legal, you could pass a law that said anything after 20 weeks, abortions up to you, up to 20 weeks.
Which is what Indiana had.
What we should have had, but this stuff about 4 weeks or 10 weeks.
Kyle Walker.
You don't even know.
You don't even know you're pregnant.
You don't even know 4 weeks.
Kyle Walker, a Republican in the state Senate, had a 15-week proposal, which I think.
Yeah, did it get heard?
No.
Yeah.
Well, the amendment got heard, but
you know, amid the chaos, this, in a bizarro kind of way, does bring clarity in one sense, and that is women to this point have been confused in that, gee, I thought the General Assembly enacted a ban, but I see these places are still open. They may not be following every twist and turn of the legal process. Mm-hmm. And so to them, they're saying, well, that wasn't so bad. You know, yeah, they had a special session, and it was this controversial bill. We were the first in the nation with a ban, but life goes on. Everything seems normal.
Just wait.
Well, for the first time, Hoosier women will see the effects of a law that was enacted before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is the first time they will have actually seen the byproduct and feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, we're going back to what it was before, which is a class issue. Women in Indiana are not going to not have access to abortion. Poor women in Indiana are not going to have access to abortion.
That's right.
That's what we've never tried to figure out.
There is absolutely that part of it, but you also have women who are in crisis, whether they're carrying twins and one of them is dead, or you're in an atopic pregnancy, and they're going to be forced to go someplace else because Indiana won't be able to care for them.
Well, that's the thing I think no one has really discussed well, is that people who are not doctors cannot think of every feasible situation that could occur.
That's right.
When you're pregnant. Pregnancy is risky.
Absolutely.
The healthiest, pregnancy is risky. And all kind of things can happen.
That's actually going to be,
I think, what a lot of the litigation settles on, which is exactly what do we mean when we say serious health risk and life and all that.
Yeah, so. And you can be sure that Rokita will ride in on that white horse of his and say every single time it wasn't endangering the woman's life or health.
Former President Donald Trump was indicted this week for a third time, this time on four counts related to efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Trump was charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States, witness tampering, conspiracy against the rights of citizens, and obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. Some of the latest charges relate to the pressure Trump allegedly put on his vice president, Mike Pence, wanting Pence to refuse to count certain Electoral College votes. Pence, responding Wednesday to the latest indictment, said he had no authority to overturn the 2020 election results. He says Trump asked him to make an unconstitutional decision on January 6th, and he refused.
On that day, President Trump asked me to put him over the Constitution, but I chose the Constitution, and I always will.
Trump remains the clear frontrunner for the Republican nomination for president. Mike O'Brien, this feels a little crazy to ask, but does the indictment of a former president on conspiracy to defraud the United States just not matter much politically at this point?
It hasn't so far. It's actually mattered politically to his benefit to this point, the indictment bump, right? Nixon's like rolling over in his grave, by the way. He's like, you know,
can't believe this is happening.
That happens today. Nixon's not resigning. I got that. You know, I can tell you that. But there was a new poll out yesterday. Reuters did a poll on Republican primary voters, and if he was convicted, it seemed to be a turning point for some. 28% still said, "I'm voting for him no matter what. I don't care what happens," because they think this is all politically motivated, and he didn't do any of this stuff. But 51% said no, they'd vote for somebody else. Now, the problem with the somebody else is you're scattering 51% of the vote across 10 different people. So you can easily win a primary with 28% of the vote in that context if they don't start consolidating this field and doing it well in advance of Iowa and those early primary states.
So I'll ask a version of the same question I just asked him, which is, at this point, do these indictments matter to Donald Trump in a negative way?
Oh, I think among general election voters, obviously not so much among Republican primary voters who don't care.
That race still looks tight because Biden's so, like, old.
Yeah, but that's early. That's early. That's, well, you know what? Trump isn't a lot younger, and he's been rode
a lot
harder. But the issue here, it seems to me, is not just the thing that frustrates me about about Mike Pence in this is he did the right thing on January 6th, okay? And if he wanted to be a profile in courage, he should have stood up and said, I did the right thing, not just because it's constitutional, but because it is the right thing. And what Donald Trump wanted me to do to steal the election from Joe Biden, which is what he wanted him to do, was wrong. And it subverts democracy. And this is a democracy, and the people have spoken, and he exhausted all of his legal challenges. What were there, 50 or 52 of them? He lost every single one. And he still tried to subvert the election, steal it from Joe Biden. And if Mike Pence had stood up then and said that, he'd be the same kind of profile and courage that Liz Cheney is. Probably would have cost him the nomination. Yeah. But threading this needle the way he's trying to do, saying, well, I did what was right. Okay. He tried to get me to do something else, but I couldn't do it because the Constitution didn't allow it. But, you know, but he's a good guy, which is what he's been doing for the last 2 years.
But he's standing strong on it now.
He's, yeah.
When he is
this is one of the first. I will say this. This week felt like, for Mike Pence at least, a shift in tone when it comes to the stuff with Donald Trump.
Question.
Where he has been much more, like, I agree that up to now he had been trying to walk that line a little bit more, saying, what I did was right, but I'm not going to throw Donald Trump under the bus completely. It felt like that started to shift.
When your notes are going to be on a giant poster board in a federal courtroom, you start acknowledging that the truth's coming
out. But if he had told the truth back then, you probably still wouldn't have a majority of the Republican primary voters believing that liar.
Let me ask them. That's the question I'm going to ask you. Do you think if Mike Pence had taken the tone he was taking this week a lot sooner, would that have made a difference to the average Republican voter?
I don't know, but I think it could have. I think it could have turned the tide for people to understand, okay, this was more serious than what we thought it was. He's been pretty wishy-washy this whole time with not wanting to really rock the boat because he wasn't. It looks to me as if he knew he was going to run and he didn't want to hurt his chances until now he's out there and he's like, okay, I have to actually be forceful about, because now he's talking real strong. Before he was talking a little passive, a little quietly, just, you know, and then like you said, stand on the Constitution. Why not just stand on, yes, that, but also it wasn't the right thing to do for the country. You know, He didn't say any of that stuff.
Is this also perhaps an acknowledgement of Mike Pence that you're not going to win over Trump voters? You're just not. There's nothing you can say or do that's going to win over those hardcore Trump voters if they don't vote for Trump. So maybe I got to find a new path.
Yeah, the two little figures, if you think of this in a cartoon way, whispering into his left and right ear, one would be the good citizen and the good steward and good leader following the Constitution. The other one is just the cold calculus of politics. These are people who wanted to hang Mike Pence. Remember the chant?
Quite literally.
Quite literally.
Quite literally.
They built the gallows and everything. So he was not going to win them over. They saw him as a traitor and a defector. So that was not going to be a path, the lane, if you will, that pundits like to talk about. There was no lane there. At least this is a lane. And now, there are other people in that lane with Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson and Will Hurd and a few others. But at least he does have some moral authority if he chooses to use it, which apparently he is doing this week. To the point of your initial question, you know, the Reuters poll was interesting. CNN also had an interesting poll this week, and I thought the most interesting component was that they looked at Trump, you know, self-styled, dedicated Trump voters, and they wanted to see what the level was of sort of tolerance. You know, everybody has blemishes. You know, what do you see as the blemishes that you can tolerate and not? And basically they said this man has no blemishes, no flaws. He is perfection.
Ooh, Trump.
Trump voters. Trump. Yeah.
So this is to Trump voters in the sense, which tells me that's the definition of a cult. I mean, if your leader, I don't think we can find any politician that doesn't have, you know, the proverbial feet of clay and shortcomings in some regard.
You don't have to look hard for Trump.
And to say that he has no blemishes and he's somehow superhuman, that kind of explains a lot. Yeah.
Well, can I just say quickly, Mike Pence should have known if people wanted to hang him, they were never going to vote for him. So
so he should have taken it.
They weren't talking
further
about the hanging Chad. They were talking about hanging.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, does another indictment of Donald Trump make him more or less likely to become the Republican nominee for president? A, more likely, B, less likely, or C, no change? Last week's question, we asked, will the Indiana General Assembly ever repeal the law allowing permitless carry of handguns? 37% of you say yes, 63% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, let's stay on the topic of former Vice President and presidential candidate Mike Pence, because he was in Indiana this week laying out his plan to tackle inflation during a visit to the state fair. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Violet Comber-Weiland reports Pence says he wants to make lowering prices a main priority in his presidential campaign.
Pence says the Biden administration spending is the main contributor to inflation in recent years. He says he is the first Republican presidential candidate to lay out a plan to tackle the problem. Pence says he plans to end inflation as president under a four-step plan.
So those are the four policies. Fiscal responsibility, reform the Fed, get them back to their basic knitting, bring jobs back to America to lower the cost of the supply chain, and unleash American energy.
Inflation has continued to ease for months, but Pence says he has seen current government spending habits hurt American families. He says increased grocery and gas prices are major contributors to people's financial burden.
Before we get to the message that Pence is spreading here, John, I want to ask about the politics of, does it make sense to you for Pence to be spending time like this in Indiana?
You know, we noted a moment ago that we saw a change in tone with the campaign this week, maybe a harsher tone, a more upfront, let's take the bull by the horns kind of tone. And maybe part of that is a return to one's roots. Whether he, pick your movie title, Finding His Groove or Getting His Mojo Back or whatever phrase you want to use, what better way to
Speaking
do it?
Speaking of pop culture references from all the decades
exactly.
ago. Yeah.
I used a 23-year-old one. Now I'm using ones that are almost settled. To do that, one way to do it is to go back to your home turf, flex your muscles, show that you still got it, get people who like you and support you and remember you fondly, presumably. And you didn't go to the fair? And use that as maybe a springboard.
The home crowd advantage.
And you can't spend all your time in your home state.
No, when it was just a
But if this is somehow, in their secret guidebook of their campaign circled as sort of the week of milestone week when things started to change. I can see going back to your home turf.
And staying on that topic, we know he's still trying to make the Republican debate stage. We talked about that on the show a couple weeks ago, I think. He needs, right now, what he needs is donations. He's fine in the polls. He needs donations. Does coming back to Indiana and going to some old friends probably help that cause?
I would think so. I think so. This is where he is. This is home. The home court advantage again. So why wouldn't you come home to where your friends are and try to get some money? I mean, it just makes sense. And then that way you have this base and you can show people in other states, look how much money I have. Look how people support me. They think I have a chance here.
Let's talk about the message then. He's right in that he's the only Republican candidate right now with a more detailed plan to try and lower inflation, although inflation is coming down. So let me ask you from a strategic standpoint, by the time, if he wants to be the nominee, by the time you're running against Joe Biden, against whom this message would presumably work the best, is this still going to be an effective message a year from now?
No, because inflation's going to be down. Unemployment is at a record low. He's already fixing the supply chain issues. I mean, he's going to have to find something else to talk about or gripe about. He's certainly not going to talk about fiscal responsibility in the context of repealing some of the ridiculous tax breaks that Trump's group passed. So I don't know how he's going to get the fiscal responsibility part of this equation. I mean, it makes sense for him to come back to raise the money from the individual contributions so he qualifies. And, you know, it also makes sense for him to test out his message, which is what this is, in front of a group that isn't going to boo him, which is what's happened to him in a number of other places.
Does this message work right now? Does it work 6 months from now? Does it work a year from now?
It doesn't have to work a year from now. It can work right now, you know, and it does work right now. But all the factors are going against inflation. I mean, inflation is down to 2%.
Yeah.
The Fed raised the rates again, so presumably by the first quarter of next year,
it's going to be
gone. We'll be back to even with wage growth. But there is a message in how we got to inflation. By flooding the economy with government money during COVID for a very ill-defined purpose, that we put the money in people's pockets who maybe didn't need it, probably didn't need it, because they put it right back into the consumer economy, which is what drove prices up to begin with.
Or through a shortage of goods caused by the supply chain.
Right. Well, it's a mixture of those.
Food and gas are not exactly throwing money away if you need it from the Biden administration.
All right. Fort Wayne businessman Eric Doden is the first candidate up with a television ad in the contentious and expensive Republican primary for governor. Doden's ad is an introduction. He talks about his roots and his profile, a pro-life champion and job creator.
Eric Doden is a visionary leader devoted to giving Hoosiers an even better way of life.
Doden's campaign said this first spot is the launch of a $2 million TV and digital ad buy this fall. Doden's opponents in the race include U.S. Senator Mike Braun, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and former Attorney General Curtis Hill. Oshia, of all the main candidates in this race, did Doden need to go up on TV first more than anyone else?
Yeah. I had to go back to remember who this guy was. I'm like, Doden, Eric Doden. I didn't recall
his time leading the IEDC.
I didn't recall.
It was uneventful. That's why.
I didn't even recall the announcement. So I had to go back and find out who.
Yeah, he's been running for quite some time.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know this person. So he has no name recognition. I don't think I'm the only person who doesn't know who he is. So he definitely needs to get his name out there. He's going up against people, good or bad, we know their name.
Is this I was saying before we came out of the video package there that this felt like a little bit of a paint-by-numbers introductory TV ad for a candidate. But is that exactly what Eric Doden needed at this point?
Probably. I mean, it's textbook in many ways. You can almost prescribe, to your point, the shots. You know, let's have a skyline shot. Let's have a slow motion with
let's
spouse
have a little
walk.
Wife.
Let's do
holding hands.
And at this point, you could say, that, you know, conventional wisdom to at some point, presumably, this will get ugly and there will be call it negative, call it comparative campaigning, more issue-based. And that's what moves the numbers, presumably. That's conventional wisdom anyway. But at this point, if you're still an unknown commodity with a good portion of the Hoosier electorate, you can't really start, you know, going after people without people knowing who you are. So this is, you know, Politics 101, Politics for Dummies even. Not that he's a dummy, but I'm plugging the book
whenever I can. Thank you.
That this is, you do a biographical spot that makes you look like a true blue all-American apple pie kind of guy.
Eric Doden, as I mentioned, he's been running for governor for a while now. Sure. He's been doing the grassroots work up to now, getting out, going to these local Republican events, mm-hmm. you know, trying to build up the exact people you need to vote for you in the primary, at least. $2 million ad buy into the fall with this is the start of, is that a good use of his money at this stage?
Oh, yeah, if it's limitless, which it is for like three of these guys. I've got kind of a radical idea on the approach for either him or Brad Chambers, and only those two guys, I think, can use it. And you look at all of them, it's hard to tell the difference, right? They can't all be pro-life, all be pro-gun, all be, you know, checking all these boxes, right?
But yeah.
Except Brad Chambers. Or Eric Doden. I think these are pretty moderate guys. And in a five-way primary, the right strategy might be to own that base. I'm not for permalist carry. I'm not for abortion ban. I'm not for any of this stuff. I'm your Mitch Daniels guy. And you pull 25% of the vote from the people that have had enough.
All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Oshia Boyd of the Indy Star. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfii.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.